2020 is pulling everyone's mask off. I mean, whether it's Democrats and their murder of the Me Too movement and their blind support for someone like Joe Biden.
They seemed really unreasonable, and it's like, are we still playing this game? What do you guys think about that?
In the here and now, that is going to be my concern. We don't want to see any more loss of life just because we lost the home.
And then have these politicians who want to co-opt everything just because it's near election time.
But solutions for these problems have to be positive, and they can't be based in policing. They just can't be based in more authoritarianism. They can't be, you don't arrest your way out of these problems.
Everybody, this is Brian Powers. This is NJRR Live. Thanks for joining us. We come to you on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. right here on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, wherever else you get your streaming from. So it's really good to have you here tonight with us. We'll be joined by a panel of political activists, comrades. You know, we get together here every week. We try to celebrate a little art. And talk about activism. That's the theme of this network. And this week's going to be no different. We're going to talk about art and activism. And I know that many people have been, of course, wrapped up over the last, you know, 48, 72 hours in this bourgeois show of electoral politics and our great celebrating our great democracy. I've heard the words great democracy about 7 trillion times in the last 4 hours. And it's made me sick every single time that I've heard it. First off, it's not a democracy. We're a republic. Okay, so it's not even a correct term for what we have. We don't have any kind of democracy. We have an elected republic where we elect douchebags to represent us, even though they don't. And, you know, this year is going to be no different. It looks good for Biden. Right now, the last reports from Michigan and Wisconsin are going to go for him. And Trump's path is getting a little worse. A couple hours ago, though, Democrats were worried. And most of the conversations I have with comrades is like about their fear and how they're scared. And I get it. And I've been trying to cheer people up a little bit, take their mind off of it, remind them that, you know, weed's going to be legal here in the state of New Jersey. Not that I needed it to be legal, but whatever. And you know, a lot of other good things happened around the country. So I want to start off in a bit of a positive note, just because all of my friends, I'm usually the guy yelling and screaming about stuff, but all my friends are so fucked up right now. I got to hook you all up with some good news. Mississippi changed their state flag, took the Confederate flag off of their state flag. Finally. I mean, far too late, far too late. Alabama, which for the love of God, Alabama. I mean, you got enough problems as a reputation as a state. We do love Alabama. I know people from Alabama. I was in the military. I served with people from Alabama, beautiful people. But in their state constitution, still had a requirement to separate colored children. And they just got rid of that yesterday. So, you know, the remnants, and for the old, you know, you got your uncle at the drunk uncle at the table claiming that racism is over. Well, we just got rid of segregationist laws just yesterday from state constitutions. So there is some bright spots, but overall, if you're worried about the Republican Party gaining power, that battle is over. The House is going to keep, you know, maintain its numbers. The Senate is not going to be flipped. The president is going to be a conservative, and the state houses are turning more Republican. And that is an indicator of grassroots organizing. That is an indicator that the Republicans are not into the bourgeoisie show of electoral politics as much as Democrats are. They're more into talking to the proletariat. And having heard Donald Trump's messaging around the country, driving up and down as I move my family, I've listened to FM radio in different regions. And Donald Trump, for all of fascism and lunacy that he's involved in, he knows how to speak to people about the issues they care about. He knows how to speak to people in rural Maine about their guns. And he knows how to speak to them about their property rights and their ability to farm their land. I heard the commercials. The Democrats are talking about freedom and I don't know what they're talking about anymore. They offer nothing. Donald Trump may be full of shit, but he's offering something and people are latching on because they don't have much anymore, if anything. And we know that. And the result is a very sick society, which, you know, millions and millions of people voted for a racist, fascist pig or a racist, warmongering, racist, fascist pig. It doesn't really matter at this point. I'm going to bring in my co-host for the week, who I'm really excited to talk to, because over the last few months, we've been reaching outside of the walls of New Jersey to meet new people, make new comrades. And one of these people is a gentleman by the name of Trehearne Cruz. Trehearne has some radio experience and stuff, but it's the first time here on NJRR Live. Welcome to the program, brother. It's nice to have you. How are you tonight? You're muted right now. You're muted right now. Hang on, we've got some, what? Oh, you had it? Nope, now you're muted again. You hit it, and then it muted again. There you go.
There we go.
There you go. Welcome to the program. Let's try it one more time. Welcome to the program, Austin Cruz from Minnesota, right?
Yes, sir. Honored to be here. Thanks for having me on this show. Shout out to everybody in New Jersey, too.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and, you know, how'd you wind up here on New Jersey Revolution Radio as my co-host tonight?
So I've been an activist now with the BLM movement here in Minnesota for since about 2015. Before that, I ran as I was the campaign manager for Lena Denise Buggs, who ran as a who was a Green. And that's how I got introduced to the Green Party and things like that. So yeah, that's how I got involved here with so then subsequently I ran her campaign, and then I became a part of the Green Party. Then I ran myself in 2015 with the city for St. Paul City Council. I was Green endorsed. Been doing a lot of activism work around racial justice issues, housing, transit, you name it, criminal justice reform, dealing with prison reform and how inmates are treated and things like that. So we've been very busy, and I got nominated to be a delegate for the Black Caucus, and then I got nominated to be a co-chair of the Green Party of the United States. And so that's where I'm at right now. And that's how I met you.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So you've been heavily identified as a Green. So, I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about presidential politics later. But I did want to talk a little bit about your activism. I'm looking through your Facebook page. Of course, you're in Minnesota. How close are you? Do you live in Minneapolis, or are you nearby Minneapolis? How far have you been from the protesting going on?
Well, we actually been organizing the protest, a lot of the protest. I'm the lead organizer for BLM Minnesota. We're not connected to the national chapter, so we're not connected to George Soros or Alicia Garza or anything like that.
We're all connected to Soros. You didn't get your Soros checks?
I didn't get any checks from George.
Man, that guy's got, I got bad. It's hard, you know, it's hard to be an activist with all these bags of money laying around. It really
is. Yeah. Well, I think George Soros owes us a little money. We've been doing the work on the ground, and they've been getting the donations for it. So he can cut the check.
Get done. I ain't getting a dime out of his cheap ass yet.
Anytime soon. Yeah, we just want to make people know that we haven't been getting any proceeds from Mr. Soros, things like that. But yeah, Marcus Golden was killed by the St. Paul Police Department here in Minnesota. St. Paul Police Department is one of the deadliest police department, is the deadliest police department in the state of Minnesota. That's kind of what got us into, before that, before Marcus Golden was killed here in St. Paul, a lot of the things dealing with police misconduct will be conducted behind closed doors. So there's like a 20-30 year period where we didn't know nothing about police brutality. And then in 2015, with the death of Marcus Golden, that's when we start really organizing here. And since then, Minnesota has become a battleground for social justice issues, especially around police accountability.
certainly, you know, I haven't talked a lot about Mr. Floyd in specific. While, you know, we talk a lot about police brutality in here in New Jersey, I guess, you know, one of the things, you know, I talked about is trying to celebrate beauty. Part of the reason why we do art and activism here is to not just talk about police brutality, just talk about these wars, just talk about, you know, because I think we get dragged down a little bit, you know, by that kind of negativity. I mean, you're closer to the protesting than I've been. I've been relatively isolated. I have family. I don't have the capacity to get out to the streets like I used to. But certainly,
a lot of,
you know,
our protests are family oriented. So you'll see people out there with strollers.
I just can't get out of the house.
Three or 4 year olds on their shoulders. So we, even during MLK Day, they had the kids were out there. So we think if you know, it's a good thing. Depending on what we're doing, you might not want to bring the kids out. But for the beginning part of that, bring the kids out so they can experience what it's like to go up against white supremacy and institutional racism. No matter what color your child is, they should come out and see an experience of this history that's happening in America, the transformation of America that's happening. If you're 3 years old and up, we provide a safe space at the beginning of our rallies for all children. And we hope anybody listening across the country makes those rallies child friendly, not Jeffrey Epstein child friendly, but, you know, child friendly for kids to come out and have a great experience and experience history, experience the transformation of America. You dig?
All right. Well, that's true. I mean, we have we've done a lot of meetings in libraries where there's some childcare, and to have an organizer involved, you know, that can maybe keep an eye on the kids while y'all have your meeting and stuff. But it's more difficult during the pandemic. But certainly, you know, I get where you're coming from. About that, like, what about the effect on you and your comrades around you? I mean, this is a long time going, and I know people were hitting it hard in the streets initially, even here in New Jersey. You know, there were, like, protests going off every day. Some days, 2, 3, 4 protests. I mean, it's the number of protests is quelled, but the level of protesting I don't think is quelled. I think it's just shifted. But being so close to kind of one of the ground zeros, I don't want to exclude all the other, you know, horrible tragedies that are taking place across the country. But, you know, being in such a spotlight for so long, what is the activist community like? Are they still keeping going? How are you dealing with, I know there's stressful, you know, times. How are you all coping as like an activist community with this spotlight on you for so long?
I think it's important for people to take breaks and get self-care. That's why it's good that we have a number of organizations. So if this organization or if this organizer gets a little tired and needs like 2 weeks off or has to focus on the election for a couple weeks, there's a lot of strong activists who can do that. So getting that self-care, but also having a network of people that can help you survive, whether it's helping you with employment. That's one of the biggest things about the George Floyd thing here in Minneapolis and St. Paul, is we've seen people come together. We've seen people come together and help people with diapers, clothing, food, whatever you need. That was the biggest thing, because it wasn't just George Floyd. It was right before George Floyd, we had information about my sister. Her son, Hardell Sherrill, was found at Beltrami County Jail. So that's like one of the biggest cases in America, too, because it affects the jail system, and it also affects the medical system that provides care to jails. So that happened a couple of days right before George Floyd. Then combine that with COVID-19, which was happening, too, where people were in their house for months and months. And then George Floyd happened, and then there was just this explosion of energy and activism that came out of COVID-19 and the murder of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery.
Yeah, it's so many names at this point. You know, we're begging for the systemic change that we also sorely need. Before I bring in our last panelists, I did want to ask you one more question. Now, right after this, I know that the Minneapolis City Council had vowed to defund the police department and reassemble. Have they actually taken any action so far, or where are they at with actually, you know, reform? You're not reforming, but really they promised to get rid of that police department, put something new in its place. Have they taken any concrete steps in that direction?
I think a lot of that has halted, and I think they have very good intentions, but I just think that they didn't do enough outreach to the community that is impacted by police brutality or that deals with police the most. So I think as that goes on, because actually Jacob Frey hired, the current Minneapolis mayor hired more police officers about a month ago.
They've expanded their policing department.
Exactly. So I think they're still looking for ways to confront that issue, but no, they haven't. That came to a stop. And I think going forward, there's going to be need for more robust outreach to the communities that are impacted by police misconduct or just policing, period, you know. Some people in the community feel like they still need police. Other people feel like they don't. I'm right in the middle of that. I'm more leaning towards don't.
All right. Well, best of luck. We'll bring in our friend Christian Perez to start to get into some of the national results. And you mentioned the Epstein theory, and I know that Christian, he keeps an eye on. So if you haven't, and if you're just tuning in, and you're a fan of Mr. Cruz out there in Minnesota, we have here with us Christian Perez, who's a political science major, a professor, and he loves to study and debunk conspiracy theories. And the reason I have him around, and first off, he's a beautiful human being who I love very much. But second off, he keeps a check, I think, on the left. And I think politics in general is done a disservice by bad information. One of the worst things we have out there are conspiracy theories right now. We see it manifesting in anti-vax movements and all kinds of other dangerous, really, really dangerous things. And Christian keeps an eye on these things for us, but also just contributes to New Jersey Revolution Radio in every way possible. So, Christian, welcome to the show. How are you feeling with the – I don't know. We've been talking here for about 20 minutes. I haven't seen a news report. I don't know if anybody's declared to be the winner yet.
I heard maybe around 9 o'clock we should expect something.
Go to bed.
It's still an old phrase. It's not over till it's over.
Yeah.
Right. Until Donald Trump is gone, I do not see any kind of victory. And Democrats are getting shellacked across the board everywhere else. If anything, at best, this is a Pyrrhic victory. This is a loss even in victory. This should have been a landslide, and it wasn't. And a lot of realities and a lot of truths are being laid to bear. And for many Americans of color, that reality and that truth has always been there. And I think a lot of people that are surprised have not been paying attention. There are people saying this isn't our country. This is exactly what this country has always, always, always been. But I'm here to talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So amongst the fun things that happened around our country.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. I had to get that off my chest because I was gonna cry. But
QAnon. Yeah, okay. QAnon. Our good friends at QAnon. Sorry, Daryl. We didn't have you on the program tonight. But we love you. But let's mention his favorite crew of people. Let's quickly.
In a nutshell.
QAnon.
Yeah.
Who's QAnon and why?
QAnon is a conspiracy theory, in a nutshell, that alleges that high-ranking Democrats, Hollywood celebrities, political bureaucrats, and other powerful individuals are running a ring of child torture camps where they rape children, drink their blood, steal their adrenochrome. There may or may not be aliens or monsters involved. This is a conspiracy theory that piggybacks off of anti-Semitism from the Middle Ages and anti-communism from the McCarthy era. This goes back to the satanic panic of the 80s. Like I said, the Middle Ages anti-Semitism and the fear that daycare centers were a communist plot in the 1960s. This has always been America. So Marjorie Taylor Greene is a CrossFit gym owner from Georgia, and she just won Georgia's 14th congressional district, beating a neurosurgeon. Yeah, that was my wife gasping. That was, she beat a neurosurgeon in the state of Georgia. The people of Georgia looked at a neurosurgeon and a CrossFit gym owner who said that Muslims are taking over, so she's an Islamophobe. She accused George Soros, the Jewish liberal donor, of being complicit in the Holocaust. He's a Jew, and she accused him of being complicit in the Holocaust. I mean, just a complete madwoman. And she has now infected the halls of Congress. Now, Congress has never been clean or pure, and it's been filled with crooks. But to allow such a baseless, moronic, stupid conspiracy theory this much power, it's almost unprecedented. Disappointed. I'm upset, but I'm never surprised. I'm never surprised at what happens in this country. She was pushing the whole, you know, black people are slaves to the Democratic Party narrative, like. Same nonsense you always hear from these types. QAnon has been labeled a domestic terror threat by the FBI. And I'm not talking about like Black Panther Party in the 1960s feeding school children. Let's make up a threat. I'm talking, this is a legit threat to this country. These people are responsible for violence and they're armed.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's absolutely terrifying. And even if Joe Biden wins tonight, Donald Trump does not go away. He's not George W. Bush, who's going to go paint dogs and come back hugging Michelle Obama in 10 years. That's not happening with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is going to have rallies till the day he dies. He's going to be mucking things up in this country till the day he dies. This is a complete disaster. And as I've always said, Joe Biden, low energy, uninspiring. This is what you get.
Well, that's what the messaging has been. And that's what I was referring to in my opening statements. And I don't know what kind of the interesting trigger. And I don't know if Donald Trump was running any kind of campaign in Minnesota, but I was in Maine and I was listening to the FM dial. I had a rental car. I didn't have a satellite. So I was listening to the FM. I was listening to local advertising. And I think we on the left and liberals and Democrats only listen to we on the left and liberals and Democrats talking about Donald Trump, as opposed to actually hearing Donald Trump. And when you listen to snippets of what they cut out in rallies to fire you up and hate Donald Trump, well, of course, you know, it's going to have that fiery effect. But when you listen to his advertising, it speaks about guns and protecting your farmland and making sure that your family is kept safe. And that sounds like stuff we all want, right? He's not talking about locking up kids at the border. He's not screaming and yelling about that. Yeah, he has his rallies where he woo-hoos everybody, but Democrats do that shit too. It's called political theater. It's called rally. I do it. Everybody's been on a megaphone. They're so gaslit, and I can even see it on Democracy Now. They blow this thing up. Donald Trump came out last night and said, I think we won. He's just rallying his base. He's doing something that anybody who's doing a little rah-rah for anything would do.
Well, he's also got a couple lawyers working in Michigan.
Making this statement out to be, he made the false claim that, oh my God, the dude is just firing up a crowd, man, okay?
Yeah, I mean, I know where you're coming from, but he's firing up armed, like, this is the thing. He's firing up the people who, like, kidnapped a governor. Like, he's not firing up jabronis.
But we're giving him that power because we are taking it that way. Well, of course, we're giving it to him as a country. And the left is doing nothing to stop it any more than the Democrats are doing, because all we're doing is going, Donald Trump is winning. Who gives a fuck? Who gives a fuck? We got legalized smokable. They don't have the Confederate flag on a Mississippi thing. Go down there and buy some for the shop and tell them that you came there as a tourist because they took that fucking bullshit off their flag.
I mean, I think that's the anomaly, though. The fact that Mississippi is willing to change their flag. I mean, and we know that $15 minimum wage is going to get gutted in Florida, but there's an audience there to speak to. There are conservatives that you could speak to instead of spouting out lame liberal platitudes that you can speak to and make promises to. Like, I don't care. I'm a Bernie-crat. I think Bernie would have won last night. I think Bernie would have shellacked in 2016. I think he would have won it in 2020, but it's not to be. It's never going to happen.
Traren, are you there? We lost Traren. I was just about to ask him about the messaging, and he dropped out real quick. But I did. you know, as far as the messaging going, I think you have a good point with Bernie, because Bernie would have employed that strategy that may have resulted in more Democrats getting elected at a state house level.
Policy.
But that's
people are not stupid anymore. Like,
the Democrats don't organize. They don't do shit. They hang out in corporate boardrooms, collect a fuck ton of money, and have image consultants put out terrible advertising. That's all they are anymore. It's a facade. I don't know what the fuck these people are talking to with freedom and soaring rhetoric about health care that they're not going to give me.
Yeah. Bill Clinton said he was going to end welfare as we know it. That was 30 years ago. Right. I mean, that's the Democrats learned that it was to them and winning elections. They wanted money. Right. So they saw Republicans taking in millions of dollars in donations. So Democrats said, we need to do that, too. And the Democratic base traditionally was what was called the Liberal Labor Alliance. And they said, you know what? We're going to sacrifice labor to the Republican Party, and we're going to leave the left wing of the party, the grassroots movement, the activists. We're going to leave them blowing in the wind. And unfortunately, that's where we end up now with a corporate Democratic Party. I always say we live in a world where people accuse Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and Joe Biden of being a socialist. Right? Nancy Pelosi blew off the Green New Deal, doesn't even know the name, as her state is burning, and they're still calling her a communist.
I know.
Right? Like, there's no attempt to combat them at that level. It's all the time. It's constant. And Democrats do not know how to do a blitz or a barrage of information. They're not fighters. Somebody made a comment to my wife about Democrats taking their gloves off. My wife is like, do they even know how to make a fist?
They don't. They never put up a fight. They never put up a fight.
What? Oh, there he is.
There he is. Brian. Darren, we lost you.
Yeah, I'll be back on the camera in a second. I'm charging the computer up here.
Yeah.
I just wanted to rebut real quick when you said kind of going along what Perez is saying here, when you're saying that the Republicans didn't get power. I think a lot of Senate races, they did get power. But actually, with Joe Biden getting elected, if Joe Biden is elected, that is actually the Republicans gaining power. And what I mean is George Bush Republicans. If you think about who was speaking at the convention, the Democrat convention, you had Republicans speaking there. If there's an organization called the Lincoln Group, they were on talking today. These are Republicans. Some of them worked for George Bush. You seen Billy Crystal became friends with so-called progressives on CNN. Billy Crystal is a neocon. These are the architects of war in Iraq and Afghanistan who are supporting Joe Biden. So they're in power now. You know, if Joe Biden wins this, these Republican neocons are the ones who are backing Joe Biden. And they had an alumni, 45, was a group who was raising money for Joe Biden and his campaign. And it was basically the old Bush camp who took us to war. So,
The Lincoln Project spent $59 million on this campaign. They raised $67 million. All right. You know how many votes they brought over to Biden? It begins with a Z and it ends with an Eero. Nothing. More Republicans voted for Trump. 93% of Republicans voted for Trump in 2020. 90% voted in 2016. 90% of Republicans voted for Trump in 2016. This strategy of reaching out to conservatives and Republicans is a failure. I feel like I've let my hair grow since COVID, but I feel like I'm pulling it out because it's like, I feel like I'm talking, like my dad used to say, I feel like I'm talking to a wall.
It really. Well, it's because they don't care. I'm telling you, they don't care, and it's reflected in their rhetoric and all that. I mean, the party is dead, as far as I can tell. It's like, it's a disaster. Let's do a commercial, and then we can laugh. Let's laugh about politics. I'm gonna laugh to keep from crying. I do. Look, I appreciate the serious consequences of everything going on, but at this point, you know, I'm just gonna keep pressing ahead with. Let's organize, man. You know
it's
what?
Very easy to be burnt out. It's very burnt out and spent.
The bottom line is, you know, over the last couple of weeks and months, I've been moving my family. You know, the business has gotten reworked, and we're working real hard at New Jersey Revolution Radio. And everybody's been all fired up about these elections and giving money to nonsense. Well, give money to something worthwhile. Give money to independent media, right? You can go to www.njrevolutionradio.com, make a donation. The reason I don't have any commercials right now, and I'll mention, of course, the August Agency, the Coffee House, and Blissful Infusions, and everybody that's always supported us in the past. Thank Christian there. You know, we really appreciate them supporting us, but I haven't had the time in my schedule to do fundraising. So, look, if you're enjoying the program tonight, the election's over yesterday. We're here today. We're going to be here tomorrow. We're going to be here for months and years to come. But how much of an impact we have depends on how much you guys chip in. So, look, the election season's over, and it's going to come around again in like 5 or 6 days. They start running for president again in 2024. So let's just take this chance right now to support something other than political theater, support independent media, give us a few dollars. And of course, Christian at Modernity Absurdity Podcast, I'm sure you have things to plug, if not just your podcast and stuff. What's going on, man?
Yeah, so definitely the same podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Perez Podcast. You can email me at PerezPodcast@gmail.com. You can find me on Facebook, Christian Perez. You can find me on Facebook, Modernity and Absurdity. Podcast available, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. This past Monday, I recorded episode 1 of season 2 of the Section 24/7 show. It's a South Jersey / Philadelphia based podcast. The host, Mike Lipinski, good guy, really knowledgeable about Philadelphia. We talk history, we talk politics, COVID, QAnon, and this election. And I'm going to be in another upcoming episode, so I can't definitely can't wait for that. Section 24/7 show. Section 24/7 show, host Mike Lipinski. Check it out.
It's awesome. Yeah, quite a title numbering system you have on there. It's the podcast Dewey Decimal system that you have going on. Trahern's still off camera, but we brought in one of the best looking people we have in the Green Party. A young man by the name of Matthew Scholar. Matt, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right. How are you, Brian?
I'm okay, man. I'm okay. You, like those of us who are less engaged in the presidential election, which is what I would say, are in pretty decent spirits like I am. You know, I talked Christian off a bridge 3 or 4 times over the last couple of hours. But, you know, you seem a little more level-headed. And I think maybe because of the recent vote in New Jersey, certain things not illegal anymore. How you feel about state politics, man? What's going on in New Jersey?
In New Jersey, well, I mean, you want me to talk about something specifically?
Weed.
Weed?
It's my favorite.
All right, let's talk about weed. I mean, it's a good thing that it's legalized. I wish that the proposition was going to be more to like release people who were already incarcerated because of like the laws that have been in place up until now regarding marijuana. You know, there's still a lot of people that, you know, should have been released and aren't going to be released. Also, I'm afraid that the way this bill is set up, it's just going to become corporate, and it's not really going to be offering that much economic support to the communities it really should be helping. Like,
It is. It's been set up, by corporate cannabis, and I've been, you know, in solidarity with New Jersey Weed Man. His hashtag is NJ Can't Get 12. This guy's been selling weed illegally across from City Hall in Trenton, New Jersey, for like over a year now, in defiance of this. And now it's going legal, and he will still, by the way, be selling it illegally because it didn't get really legalized. After all, they did was set up a system to profit from cannabis, and it's unfortunate that they did it that way, but that's the way they did it. I mean, you know, I got arrested. I mean, even with a medical card, I'm legally allowed to smoke weed, and still, I got dragged into a jail cell by Middlesex County sheriffs. I mean, and when people ask me, well, and right now, as a matter of fact, I have a court date tomorrow for resisting arrest, even though they've dropped the possession of marijuana charges. And when people ask me, well, why do you still have charges pending? Why are you under arrest? It's very simple. The officer who arrested me has a very tiny penis. And there's nothing I can do about that. And no law they will ever pass will give Officer Van de Groot of the Middlesex County Sheriff's Department a larger penis. And it's unfortunate. And I feel badly for him. But, you know. These kinds of things empower cops. So I guess it's – and what I'm afraid of is that now we give corporate cannabis the license to sell cannabis, but we don't give black market dealers like New Jersey Weedman the ability to sell cannabis. Yeah. And so cops will have just as much reason to beat people up and throw them in jail and do weird things, you know.
Sure.
And then drag the person that they did it to into court on charges.
And then there's also Proposition 3 that passed regretfully. That was about the redistricting with the census results. The state is trying to claim, and not even the whole state legislature. It's really Democrats in the state legislature are trying to claim that the census results, they might be coming late, and because they might be coming late, we're going to delay changing the district boundaries in New Jersey. As far as I'm concerned, that's just a ploy for Democratic incumbents to stay in their seats longer and not have to be held accountable to changing demographics. Because what's going to happen is that means for at least two additional years, it's not just one additional year that they're delaying. They're delaying for two additional years. The redistricting, and a lot of these communities that have had a lot of immigrant populations come in from Latin America and Asia, those communities are going to be severely underrepresented in the state legislature for an additional 2 years.
Man. Trahern, are you there, buddy? I don't see you, but I see you muted. I'm not sure. Wanted to check in with Minnesota and see how their state politics went. But Christian, I mean, weed. Let's go back to weed with you because, you know, I want to talk about weed for a little while. I even said weed a lot in the last few sentences. Weed. What do you think about the legalization of cannabis in the state?
I mean, I'm just all I can do is piggyback on what Matthew said. I think it's a good thing. It's a necessary thing. It should have been legal anyway. The only reason it was criminalized decades ago is because, you know, rich people weren't profiting off of it, and it was used to criminalize people of color, Mexicans and blacks, lazy and whatnot. I think it's good that it's legalized, but there needs to be additional legislation that lets people out of jail, that cleans up people's records. If people were fined, if people have lost money, people have had trouble in their careers, any type of damage to people's careers and livelihood, I mean, we're never going to see those people get, their justice, unfortunately. But something needs to be done, and we need to get those people out of prison. We need to clean up those records. It's absolutely absurd that we're going to have primarily white-owned businesses profiting off of an industry that was primarily run by people of color. In many places, not in all instances, but in many areas, urban areas, and places like New York and New Jersey, that's definitely the case.
Yeah. Well, I think we have to take this liberal strategy of let's put pressure on them, you know, to do the right thing. But that's where we're at right now. Trahern, what went on in Minnesota? Any exciting state measures take place as far as like redistricting? Is your state run by the mafia as well? So they just hold on to their seats with all death grips of power, or is that just New Jersey?
I don't think much changed at the state or in the House, but there was ranked choice voting on the ballot in Bloomington, Minnesota, and in Minnetonka. So we're waiting to see the results of that. So those were some of the most exciting measures that we were keeping an eye on.
That's the thing that the Green Party has been very kind of pushing a lot. I know Greens here in New Jersey have been going after a lot of ranked choice voting. I'm not sure if Matt has worked specifically on ranked choice voting at all during his time. Matt, have you seen any progress on ranked choice voting around the country as well? Can you hear us?
Well, I mean, I can tell you what I know in New Jersey. I'm loosely involved with the push for ranked choice voting in New Jersey. I'm not super involved with that campaign, but I'm familiar with the people who are, and I kind of do see the emails. But they're starting a campaign here in New Jersey to get ranked choice voting. I mean, I personally, for me, probably wouldn't take advantage of the ranked choice voting so much, assuming that, you know, it was like a 3 or 4 way race where, like, you know, you had a Republican, a Democrat, a Green, and a Libertarian. Like, I wouldn't rank some of those other choices. But, like, I also understand, like, you know, the liberals who are like, well, we don't want to be spoilers. So, you know, I see where ranked choice voting is very helpful for, you know, allowing those people to feel like they're not spoilers and be able to vote their conscience and not feel bad about it.
Yeah. Maine had a Senate race with ranked choice voting, and I know there was a Green even involved in it. It didn't seem to come into play as the incumbent, Susan Collins, won a fifth term, and that was announced just, you know, a few hours ago. So, you know, I mean, like, I guess, I mean, even though they passed ranked choice voting, and I guess Greens are very hot on this around the country, it didn't make a difference in this big Senate race, which I believe is the second one because we had a candidate. So I guess my question is, like, are we wasting our time? Here's my theory. We've got police brutality out there. We've got environmental concerns. We've got, you know, all these other social justice issues and things that are fucked up in our society. And elections right now, voter turnout is like nobody gives a fuck. Are we really communicating to people by pushing ranked choice voting?
Can I? Did you want to go first, Matt? Or well, I just honestly, we have ranked choice voting here in some of the Minneapolis and St. Paul and Minneapolis and city council races. And if you're, I think us as Greens kind of go into what you're saying. I was just looking at the exit polls, national exit polls. The number one issue was the economy. 35%. Racial inequality was number 20. Then a coronavirus. Then crime and safety. Then healthcare policy. So, I think us independents and Greens, those are some of the things that we should be looking at. So we're not. So that because we have policies that address all those issues, but it's just making sure that we're, or even with ranked choice, we won't be able to, like, the Black community can't take advantage of Black elected officials because sometimes we're not organized. The Green Party won't be able to take advantage of ranked choice voting because we're not organized. Yeah. So if we're not polling at a certain percentage in a race, we'll get knocked out in the first round and it doesn't even matter. Or the Democrat Party will win in the first round and get over 50% of the vote in the first round, and then it's over. Yeah. So it just comes back to being organized and having that electoral structure down to the precinct level, down to the block captain level, all the way up to the state level so that we could start winning elections and stuff and have an infrastructure in place to do it.
Yeah. Christian.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in favor of ranked choice voting in that it just opens up more of an area for third parties. The problem is third parties in this country, and I've never met a Green Party person I didn't like. They don't have the numbers. They don't have the institution. They don't have the organization, right? I mean, I think it's great that the Green Party's organizing in New Jersey and Minnesota. That's absolutely what they need to do. But I think they should focus on local elections, regional elections, as opposed to presidential elections. I mean, I found out on this show that Howie Hawkins is only on 30 ballots. What good is, you know, people are going to vote who they've heard.
It's very unfair. Look, there's a lot of unfair regulations keeping vegetables off the ballot in a lot of states. And we're very, you know, we have to fight that on a grassroots level. We really do. Matt, I mean, I also don't want to take this as poo-pooing ranked choice. I think it's a better system. And I think if Americans knew how to use it, it could create a more robust political system where more people participate. And I think that's a good thing. I just don't know if it's communicating well with people that we want to organize who are oppressed, who are poor, who are getting shit on. And, ooh, one day every 4 years I get to go in and, you know, fill out a little form for a couple extra names. I don't know if it communicates well.
No, I absolutely agree, Brian. I mean, you can look at Maine, right? Lisa Savage there, she just barely pulled 5% off in the first round, right? Mm. And, you know, I think that just shows that if money's still in politics, if people don't know how to use the ranked choice voting, what's it matter? You know, I mean, there was tons of money, millions of dollars that was pumped into that mean Senate race. None of that was going to Lisa Savage. So, you know, she never really had a shot. Maybe she would have had a better shot if instead of trying to win over that ranked choice vote, if she was actually out there organizing a little more with some of the grassroots organizers. I mean, I kept seeing graphics coming out of the Lisa Savage campaign. Oh, you know, rank me one and then rank the Democrat second. Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, ranking the Democrat second, who is still, you know, a warmonger, who's saying, oh, we should, you know, continue to have warships built in Maine. I don't see like how that is actually, you know, promoting the message that the Green Party actually supports.
Yeah, I was in, like I referred to, I was in Maine. And the fact that we can only get 5% against this pathetic Democratic Party messaging is bad. Trahern?
I like Lisa Savage a lot. I actually seen her in one of the debates, and I thought she won. I thought her clothes could have been a little tighter, but as far as when she had Susan Collins, like every other answer, Susan Collins was like, oh, I agree with Lisa. I agree with Lisa. You know, it's like, wow.
We shouldn't criticize women on clothing. Right. We're a group of men here. I got called out or else the feminists are going to start protesting me, and I don't need that.
No, I agree with Lisa a lot, but what just goes back to what you were saying as far as us as a party, like what we're...
But it's about infrastructure, and it's not even beaten up. I don't know Lisa. I've never met her, and I don't think I've seen much of her, so I don't want to make this to criticize them of somebody, you know, that I'm not familiar with.
No, but, I thought she was great, actually.
Yeah, it's about infrastructure. It's about what we going back to having that precinct captain attitude, you know, and just what you're up against in honestly, in messaging, you know, we're good as a party. We just can't get it out there. And I think focusing on, you know, this issue is a little bit of, I appreciate people doing it as PAC work, as activist work or whatever, but as a Green Party some of these issues we put on the forefront are just as bad, honestly, we're just as bad as the Democrats sometimes, talking about shit people don't care about. And that's not going to help us grow as a party and be able to push forward ranked choice voting, you know, in the long run.
And to follow up what Matt said, if she said, and I don't, I think Lisa should be the senator in Maine, but I know here in Minnesota, the Democrats aren't going to say vote for the Green second. I know they're not because I've experienced and people are saying, they're saying just vote for one person and that's it. So we're practicing, we're being all noble and trying to practice this stuff, but the other side's not doing that. And I think that's where...
Talk about healthcare. Tell them we're going to get them better health. Tell them we're going to protect the environment. You know how much Maine loves their environment? They're trying to, and Democrats and Republicans are teaming up to run a big goddamn new power line through the whole beautiful state. 85% of Maine doesn't want that to happen, but they're going to do it anyway. Democrats and Republicans together. Maine is a gorgeous state. They don't want power lines and above ground oil pipelines coming through their state. And that's something any Mainer, no matter how right wing, no matter how left wing, will pretty much agree on, you know, because it's just how they are up there. They love the beauty of their state, you know. And so, you know, if she's talking about that issue or she's talking about gun rights, I don't know where she stands on gun rights, but they like guns in Maine. If she's not anti-gun, you know, she should be talking about the issues the proletariat cares about, or else we're just, you know, we're playing the same game Democrats are. And it's no use having a Green Party. You know?
You got to be vicious. The Republicans fight to win. That's all they care about is power and winning power, right? They try to steal it. I mean, it's like burning the candle at both ends. So I do have to say, yes, Biden is uninspiring, but the Republicans have been engaged in voter suppression for a generation now, right? So it's more like the candle's getting burnt on both ends. It's not only just that the Democrats are uninspiring, it's that the Republicans play for keeps. And the Democrats only ever take the gloves off is when they're dealing with Greens or when they're dealing with insurgents and so on and so forth. And when we really need them to stand up for liberals, they won't do it. I mean, for the Democrats, for themselves, they won't do it. I mean, they openly reject the left. I mean, and the Republicans are willing to let a racist and a conspiracy theorist become president. They're willing to let that happen to win. And Democrats like viciously hate Bernie Sanders. You can talk to some of these boomer liberals. They hate Bernie Sanders, and 3/4 of them can't even tell you why.
They don't know. They don't know because dumbassery. Our comrade Justin, from also a young eco-socialist, says, as much as I hate the weasel Van Drew, I like watching her liberal whine and supporters sad. So he's talking about Amy Kennedy, of course, down in CD2, who is upset that Jeff Van Drew just won re-election. Jeff Van Drew, of course, is a was a Democrat who had to get elected, all right, to defeat Trump, because we had to stop Trump and elect any Democrat, any blue will do. So vote for Jeff Van Drew, right? About a year into his first term as a congressman, Jeff Van Drew turned into a Republican supporting Donald Trump, and he just got reelected.
I always thought he was an asshole.
Oh, you thought?
I don't know why. I don't know why they. Well, I mean, I guess they nominated him because the Democratic Party keeps trying to appeal to Republicans, and obviously it backfired for them because then he became a Republican.
Oh, he's a Republican.
But I mean, it's the whole thing like with the national race too. I know we were discussing this before the show. The Democratic Party needs to stop appealing to Republicans and start appealing to working class people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so just to back up a little bit, because I've been cursing. Christian, you remember this is the race where they had an African-American guy, Cory Booker guy, whatever. I'm not saying he had great politics, but he's an African-American man from that district. Who working families and all those wonderful, beautiful liberals who care so much about working families.
Did they ship it when they shipped in the Kennedy, right?
Are you talking about the U.S. Senate race?
Yeah, the Amy Kennedy, right? So, yeah.
Right. I thought you said Cory Booker. No.
Will Cunningham.
He's a Cory Booker guy.
He's a Cory Booker guy. Will Cunningham was in the primary against this. Will Cunningham came in and working family who cares very much about African American and politics and, you know, bringing people up from the grassroots, flew in Kennedy to run against him. Good job.
Yeah. I think the Kennedy, like,
and she lost. And so now I have to say, 2 more years to hang out with Donald Trump in Congress.
As Americans, like, our country was founded because we wanted to depose a king. We've spent the rest of that time putting people up on pedestals. And like I was saying, I don't care about Chelsea Clinton. Stop trying to make me care about Chelsea Clinton. Stop trying to make me care about that goofy redheaded Kennedy. Stop trying to make me care about these people. I don't care. I don't care that your daddy was a president, that your mommy was a senator. I don't care because you're not going to speak to me. You're rich.
It's how white supremacy keeps going.
Yeah, I mean, I asked my dad as a kid.
In the family.
Yeah. Yeah, I asked my dad as a kid. I said, Pop, are presidents rich? He said, they are when they come out.
So right? I was talking to our comrade Lark, who was on the show. We were having a conversation about politics, and she says, L.A. is a place where nobody comes from there. Nobody comes from L.A. And so when people come there from the East Coast, where we all get jobs because of our families and because, you know, we're white and stuff like that, we're like, people just look at us like we're idiots because we kind of are. We're used to getting a job at a library, not because we know the Dewey Decimal System, but because our uncle is a mayor of a town who is in charge of a library. You know, I mean, there's never, and I saw it in Trenton. I mean, there's literally good 75% of people are just not qualified to do what the important things that they're doing. And as a matter of fact, the working families, did you know who our new Secretary of Labor is in New Jersey?
No.
My guess?
Oh, no, they shipped that guy in from...
No.
No, I was thinking of something else. Go ahead.
And William Mejia. That's what I heard. I want to look this up. Is it true?
She's one of the North Jersey Democrats, right?
So she ran working families during the $15 an hour campaign.
Oh, that's right. I used to get the emails with her name on them back in the day.
And, you know, I don't know her,
so I don't really have an opinion.
I do. I do. And I mean, basically the end of that campaign when 15 now just kind of dropped out of it was working families took it over and handed it over to business people and millionaires. The end of the campaign was press conferences with business owners instead of people that work for a living. It was the most embarrassing fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. And if it's true that she's the Secretary of Labor or got some job within the Murphy administration, it's just another example of somebody that sells out everybody and then gets promoted, which is what happened, like a $15 an hour campaign. It's just a complete sellout. I mean, we're sitting here in was it going to be $12 an hour this year?
Yeah.
Looking for 15 now, 5 fucking years ago, man.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. And Brian, I can speak a little bit about the 15 now campaign because I was involved with some of that. Because, you know, I hadn't realized exactly where people actually stood on the issue.
Yeah.
When I was involved with 15 now, I thought it meant 15 now. And obviously, a lot of the players.
I was one of the founders. That's what we meant. Yeah.
What was that?
I was one of the founders here in New Jersey. It is what we meant.
Yeah. No. And a lot of these people who latched onto the campaign, they changed it to 15, 10 years from now. And you know, I remember I was doing work with Make the Road New Jersey, and you know, we had youth involved with that who were like, yeah, we need 15 now. And then we got slapped with a bill, and you know, that bill was it was even worse than what they ended up passing. But what they ended up passing was stupid too, because it excluded farm workers, it excluded migrant workers, excluded tipped workers.
Wouldn't put their name on it.
It didn't include any of them, and it only included teen workers because we fought like hell, and it was still a slap in the face because we still weren't getting 15 now.
We're never going to give it to you. And I saw this from the inside. So it was right when I got hired to work with CWA, and I was getting roped in and thought I was having some kind of effect. And I do think I had some kind of effect, but I was in the room when they were talking about passing a bill that was going to get vetoed and never pass anyway. And I'm listening to working families and all these union leaders say, oh, we should just do it because it's what we can get now. Because they wanted to make politicians look good. They didn't give a fuck what the minimum wage was. And these aren't even Democrats. These are union leaders, union presidents, people that organize unions, selling us out because they didn't want to confront Craig Coughlin. They didn't want to confront Steve Sweeney. They're fucking bullshit artists. And I was on that conference call saying, no, why would we put our name on this? It's pathetic. It's not going to pass anyway. Who cares? Take a stand. And they wouldn't do it because they don't have the balls to do something that wouldn't even done nothing. Christie was going to veto the bill. Nobody cared. It was going nowhere. And they still had to kiss Democratic Party ass. I heard in firsthand when I tried to bring Alex Law into a meeting to meet with CWA officials, they wouldn't even meet with them. And the reason was Donnie Norcross will be mad at us. If he finds out we met with his competition, he'll be mad and he'll be pissed. And I can't deal with Donnie Norcross being mad because I'm a fucking fraud. Because I'm a fucking union leader. It doesn't give a fuck about workers. I need to be friends with Donnie Norcross.
No, Brian, I wish I saw this stuff when, you know, I was involved. Like, I didn't see that all right away. I mean, I see it now. But, you know, I was one of those assholes that kissed up to Governor Murphy. Governor Murphy came to my house to go make a video. And you know, I'm just thinking about it looking back. Like it made him look good. But what did we really get? We got a watered down bill.
It was I saw it happen in slow motion, and I will give a lot of credit to 15 now and to the comrades that stayed involved with 15 now. As that thing was getting pulled away by the liberal establishment, we did everything we could. But we didn't, again, like we were talking about with Traeger, about not having the infrastructure, not having the support, never gave us a dime. They wouldn't give us any money to organize. I will give credit to one CWA local early on that bought us, you know, a couple hundred dollars worth of signs. But that was really like the only material support that we ever got from anybody associated with the Democratic Party, you know, and it's just pathetic. It was a show for them from the very beginning. And I think for 15 now and we were younger. It was started here in New Jersey with some college kids and a high school student, you know, on Facebook. And we're talking 5-6 years ago, you know, and it really taught me. So from that experience, I learned a lot about communications and organizing. But it also taught me, you know, who you can trust in New Jersey politics, which is nobody. Which is nobody. It's just a fucking mess, man. And if you try to get involved as an activist, you just got to just organize with the people and don't even talk to them anymore. That's why I don't really care about
trying. Well, I think people need to just stop trying to play nice with politicians and stop worrying about their electability, stop worrying about elections, and actually go out and organize. Like, I mean, the Democrats have that issue, but then you look at some of the independent political people in the state, and they don't even always do the organizing that they need to be doing.
No, they don't. Well, they used to. So let's get into some trouble here in New Jersey. So we had to. Do you know vote totals? First off, we had some independent candidates. I know. Do you have a rundown at all for us, or have any idea of vote totals that have come in so far?
No, I have some ideas of vote totals.
Here, what's going on out there in the independent wacky world of third party New Jersey politics?
Yeah, I can talk to you a little bit about like the Green Party results so far. I can tell you that Howie Hawkins got 1/3 of what Madeline Hoffman got. I'm just saying.
How did Gloria do? Do we know how Gloria La Rivera did?
Gloria, I think it was like 0.1% or something like that. Let me look.
Madeline tripled Potato Head.
Yeah.
I really like Madeline. I would have liked to have seen her do really, really well. It's a shame.
I would have liked to see her tell Howie Hawkins he's a fucking potato head and not bring
it. Yeah. I mean, Cory Booker is a juggernaut in this state.
Well, I mean, Cory Booker didn't do shit, though, man.
He didn't have
to. I didn't see him make one appearance. I didn't hear him on the media. I saw no advertisements. I think
he did a debate, but he only did the debate at like the very last minute.
Did he walk into the debate like, what's up?
He didn't even really answer the questions because he doesn't need to be held accountable.
Because he doesn't have to, no competition.
Right. And with this U.S. Senate race, Veronica Fernandez was also running. She's a Bernie-crat, and she ran as an independent. And she actually came very close to Madeline. Madeline beat her, but it's definitely close. And I mean, the votes are still coming in. I think we're only at like 66 reporting right now.
I'll give credit to Madeline that she's been a nonstop campaigner.
Yeah, she's a workhorse.
Yeah, she's a workhorse and she's been out there and she does it, with genuine, you know, love for, you know, these anti-war causes and things that she represents. So she's really worked very hard. And, you know, I hope she gets some good vote totals. But I mean,
she's going to beat 2018.
That's awesome. Yeah. She got about 20,000 the last time around running against Bob Menendez.
She got 25,150 in 2018. She's currently at 22,166 with only 64% of the vote reporting for the U.S. Senate race. So that means she's on track to get well over 30,000.
Depends on where the votes come in from, though, too. You know, if you're Southern Jersey votes, Brian, a lot less Madeline.
Brian, when you look at third party support, though, third party support's roughly even throughout the state.
Really? Okay. All right. Well. Good. I mean, she ran an okay campaign. Again, I'd love to see more party building, but I think that's like on the, you know, looking, you know, from the party side, which I've always been a party guy. Like, so I've always been like, hey, candidates are out there to, you know, help to bring attention to the party because we need infrastructure and you need to. So it's great to have candidates. I mean, we're a political party, so we should.
Well, Brian, I worked on Madeline's campaign, and I can say that as far as I'm concerned, the national race wasn't very supportive, not as supportive as it needed to be. I mean, we were trying to do phone banking, and it only happened when like it actually needed to happen, and it got, you know, Madeline was pushed to the bottom of the script with like this, like she was hardly even mentioned in their script. I mean, there was a lot of communication issues with the national campaign.
Infrastructure.
I'm sorry. How much money did the Greens raise nationally? Is there any indication of that? And then B, what was it? How much money have they raised? And then That's why I asked you the question. Well, then, does anybody know how much money they raise? Like, well, the second point was, this is why you need numbers. This is why you need bodies.
Well, we have numbers, but they're not
dues paying. Right there.
I'm sorry?
So we have numbers, but they're not dues paying.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, even if you need bodies and you need money to run a campaign, and it's like, how many people can Howie Hawkins get together? If they're focusing all their money on Howie, someone like Madeline gets eaten up. And it's a shame. Because like I said, like I keep saying, they should focus on local and regional elections. I honestly feel like Madeline Hoffman probably has more name recognition in New Jersey than Howie Hawkins has nationally.
Right.
I would make that claim. For what it's worth, I would make that claim.
No, absolutely.
She's got the track record. She's got the videos. You could say, look, Madeline's there. She's trying to close up the camps and all that stuff. She's got the track record. I mean, Howie Hawkins... nationally, I mean, I don't know.
It is what it is. I also think there's just issues nationally with the way the campaign was run. I mean, Howie could have done better if the national campaign actually, you know, did some more grassroots organizing. But what did they really do? They focused on, you know, these vote totals, which the vote totals would naturally go up if they did more grassroots organizing. And then when it came to ballot access, everybody's blaming COVID-19, which did COVID-19 maybe contribute slightly? I don't know, maybe, but like, I think really, it's just, you know, a lack of organization. I mean, I know in Louisiana, what happened was they collected the signatures and then they didn't get turned in. In Pennsylvania, apparently something was faxed that wasn't supposed to be faxed.
Yeah, I saw it. It was a disaster. I mean, I was on the inside of it, and it was a disaster. And then, unfortunately, egos got involved. And I mean, it's just, I mean, I think that because Howie had run so much and he was a popular guy in New York and done good things for the Green Party in New York, that might translate nationally. I supported him. I mean, I did genuinely support the guy for a period of time. I you know, but when once I saw the operation, I was like, holy shit, you, Matt, you don't know the half of it. And I wish we had more time to beat up the potato head. But, you know, we can't focus on that forever. It's over. We have shit to do. We have organizing. We have mutual aid going on. There's workers' rights are going to be attacked no matter who gets elected. So I just want to encourage, you know, Matt, you, all your comrades. Taryn, sorry we lost you tonight, buddy, but, you know, you come back for the next one. We liked having you here until you had the tech issues. But before we go, Christian, one last word.
Yeah, I mean, nothing really. I mean, just thanks for having me. If you can, check out the Section 24/7 podcast, Section 24/7 show. It's a podcast. I was recently featured talking about COVID, QAnon, and then this election that still hasn't ended. You can find me on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, my podcast. I'm on YouTube, and you can find me on Facebook at Modernity and Absurdity, Twitter at Perez Podcast. If you ever want to chat, email me, PerezPodcast@gmail.com. That's the plug.
Matthew, I know you're getting ready for school. It looks like you may be in some type of dormitory establishment there. So I appreciate you coming on during a busy time. You got any activism going on? Anything you need to draw attention to before we go?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just contribute this. You know, I chair the Young Eco-Socialists of the Green Party. We're the youth caucus of that party. And, you know, I think, honestly, we have a strong voice in this party, and we do need to continue building our voice, because, you know, we are the future of that party and our voices should be heard. So I'm going to encourage anybody who wants to get involved with the Young Eco-Socialists, they can do that. Follow us on Instagram. That's at young.ecosocialist.nj. And you can see some of the work that we're doing. And, you know, we welcome everybody to come, you know, join us and build a strong green message that, you know, is involved with grassroots organizing. And yeah.
Cool. Thanks a lot. Yeah, a lot of great people in the Young Eco-Socialist organization. So I appreciate what you guys are doing there. If you can give a few dollars, please give a few dollars. I'm going to be here. I'm going to be here through elections, during hot elections. This show is not about elections. Even though we talk about them, I like to bring them up as just a point of fact. It's just another topic. We'll be talking about a lot more things coming up as we combine art and activism. I want to thank It's War Baby, ITZWARBABY on Spotify for contributing the song Grandma's House, which I'll be playing a few more times. You know, we like to put a tune in your head over months and weeks or so. So if you would like, you know, to contribute to New Jersey Revolution Radio and provide us with some music, hit me up. Send me an email, info@njrevolutionradio.com. Send it to me on Instagram or one of our social medias. And, you know, maybe we'll play it before the show or during the show or whatever. I'm always looking to help an artist out who wants to get the music out there. And it's all been a lot of hip-hop lately. I don't want you to think I'm just a hip-hop guy. Heavy metal, you know, everything. Country, I might have a problem with country. I don't know if I can bring myself to play country music. Send me some stuff. All right. I'll see what's up. But I want you all to use New Jersey Revolution Radio as a vehicle for change. That's what it's supposed to be. So until next week at 8 p.m., this is Brian Powers. And I want to remind everybody that the police can quit their jobs. Take care.
Twenty is pulling everyone's mask off. I mean, whether it's Democrats and their murder of the Me Too movement and their blind support for someone like Joe Biden.
They seemed really unreasonable, and it's like, are we still playing this game? What do you guys think about that?
In the here and now, that is going to be my concern. We don't want to see any more loss of life just because he wants to own the world.
And then have these politicians who want to co-op everything just because it's near election time.
But solutions for these problems have to be positive, and they can't be based in policing. They just can't be based in more authoritarianism. They don't arrest your way out of these problems.